Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
No. I was going to say something really funny, but I've decided not to.
Adrift with Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port.
Hello.
Hello.
You might hear a bit of background noise on today's podcast. The window's wide open.
Yeah, we have.
Because there's a weird smell in here.
It was a bit smelly, yeah.
I don't know if it's coming from the bathroom. I don't know if there's some kind of plumbing problem. Mm. But how bad would something need to be before you mentioned it yourself in somebody else's house?
Oh, so, so bad. Like, yeah. Almost fainting.
What about the food people cook you?
Yeah.
So you go round to the house. How disgusting would it have to be before you sort of just pushed it around your plate and then didn't eat it?
I can't imagine a level of disgustingness where I wouldn't just eat it.
I remember as a kid being really funny about going around to other people's houses, like just not liking any of the food.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is weird to me because it wasn't like we ate cordon bleu food at home.
Right.
Like everything was out of a box and done at Gas Mark 6 for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, it was all frozen food, but I was very sort of picky as a kid. I was thinking as well, over the weekend, I was thinking about how much cordial and how many sugary drinks I would drink as a kid. And I can't remember. I remember like drinking a lot of Vimto, which is this sort of thick, gloopy, berry flavoured sweetened drink, which is really popular up north and less popular down south.
Yeah.
But the reason I think I must have drank so many sort of sweetened drinks as a kid is I've got this cousin Rachel, and the thing that was notable about her was that she liked drinking water.
Oh, weird.
So it was odd that there was a kid who drank water.
Yeah,
then you must assume, well, the rest of us must have just been drinking like sweetened squash and cordials the whole time.
Now it's normal for kids to just drink water, isn't
it?
But yeah, you just had to have like something with loads of sugar in it.
What's wrong with them drinking water? Oh, that's so weird. I don't know why I mentioned any of all that. Anyway, here we are. Might have to kind of rush through today's podcast a little bit because I've got to go out to a meeting straight after this and I'm dreading it.
Oh, no. Why? What is it?
So basically, there is a huge organisation that everybody will have heard of that is, as part of its many operations, like podcasting is something they're doing more and more of.
Right.
And I received an email from somebody there a couple of weeks ago saying, would you like to come in for a meeting? We're inviting a few people from the podcast industry and we want to explore how we can help support podcasters alongside our own.
Okay.
So I thought that was a nice thing to be asked for.
Yeah, lovely.
And then, of course, straight away, I get like an anxiety about having to go to this meeting and who's going to be there and so on. And because my stuff with faces, I'm always paranoid that I'm going to go along to something. There's going to be somebody I've met before and I'm not going to recognize them. That is the baseline of dread with which I move through any kind of interaction with other people. So I emailed back and saying, sure, I'd love to come along. They said, great, it's just going to be a small round table. So I emailed back and say, this is a bit embarrassing, but I'm a bit face blind. Could you let me know who else is going to be there?
Oh, okay. Good way of, solving that problem. Yeah.
And she emails back saying, no.
What?
Because of GDPR.
No.
Yeah. Now, if you don't know what GDPR is, it's the thing that you've been getting lots of emails about recently. It's some new legislation that's been brought in to protect people's privacy to do with online data primarily.
Right.
But I don't think it extends to a meeting that I'm going to be at.
Because you'll find out who everyone is when you get there.
Yeah.
When you have to introduce yourselves.
Only hopefully. It's just going to be more awkward when I get there.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Wow.
Will you come for a meeting? Yes, I will. Who's the meeting with? We can't tell you.
I think she doesn't know yet. I think she's like, I don't know, I haven't booked anyone else yet.
Nobody else has RSVP.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just the strangest thing, though. Yeah. So I'm going to turn up to go to this thing and no idea.
It's just so stressful.
Like, what if it's a room full of my enemies and it's an ambush?
Maybe that's why she couldn't tell you.
Maybe. Like, part of me has also been thinking, what if they're doing a revival of This Is Your Life?
Oh, that's what I thought. I genuinely thought, what if?
But this GDPR, I feel like it's the new health and safety. In other words, when people just want an excuse for something they can't be asked for, or they've got wrong to say, you know, they used to go, oh, sorry, I can't, it's health and safety. When actually there's no rules with health and safety. I think it's the same with GDPR. Can you tell me who else is going to be at this meeting? No, I can't, GDPR.
I'm going to remember that. Anything I don't want to do now, no, GDPR.
Sorry if you got your birthday, GDPR.
Yeah.
The other thing that's happened to me in recent days was I went to a 2-year-old's birthday party, and this was a similar situation. So basically, my son is in nursery 2 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
I keep my interactions with the other people at the nursery to a bare minimum.
Okay.
Yeah, apart from the people who are looking after him.
Right.
I don't need to know the other parents.
Okay.
And go to the social events or anything like that.
Oh, are there social events, do you think?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Distancing yourself, okay.
Well, it's, yeah, more protecting.
Protecting
myself and others for awkward interactions with me.
Okay.
But anyway, so we get this invitation that they hand out from the nursery, from one of the other parents, saying such and such a kid is having a second birthday party and they would like to invite everybody in the class.
Okay.
And I think probably to some extent this is going to be my life now for the next 10 years or whatever it will be. So I said to Sarah, do you think we should go to that? She said, oh, I don't know. And then we forget all about it. Mm. The day before the party, the nursery sent out round an email saying, excuse me, can those people who haven't RSVP'd please do so?
Oh.
So I said to Sarah, now I feel guilty. We should go.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to this party.
Yeah.
But I don't know who this kid is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the parents look like.
Oh, no.
Yes.
So you don't know who's holding the party?
No. So that's that. And we go. And actually, it's a really lovely party. They're like they've got Fortnum and Mason's biscuits.
You're
they've
kidding.
Got an entertainer.
Oh, I can't
they've
wait for
they've got all
this.
Things for the kids to go on.
Posh biscuits.
It was very, very posh. And anyway, you know, we don't interact with any of the other parents. So 2/3 into the party, I am standing behind the birthday girl.
Right.
And standing behind her is her granddad.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I get talking to him.
Mm.
And it turns out he's Northern.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, straight away we have this little connection.
Yeah.
He's from Bolton. Mm-hmm. So straight away I've got a great bit of small talk, which is that I'd recently read that the trains between Manchester and Bolton have been a bit iffy recently.
Oh, God.
So I'm able to bring this up. He's a man of a certain age. He's about my dad's age. So
right.
He's quite interested in talking about the trains between Manchester
Good.
And Bolton.
Good.
So we're chatting and we are getting on like a house on fire, me and this Northern granddad.
Great.
We start talking about music. And it turns out in the 60s, he went to see the Beatles twice in Blackpool. And he used to knock about all these Manchester clubs. Now, I know a guy who was a singer in a Manchester rock and roll band in the 60s and 70s, a guy called Mike Sweeney. He still goes out singing. He's a radio presenter up north. I said, oh, do you ever see Mike Sweeney's band? And he went, oh, yeah. And then he starts talking about how he loves this guy on radio and he's chatting all about him. I said, oh, I used to work with him. He's like, oh, right. Where'd you work with him at? I said, oh, Piccadilly Radio. He's like, all right. And then he doesn't ask me about what I did there or anything like that. We just carry on talking. He brings up other names of DJs at that radio station over the years. I'm able to fill in the gaps of his knowledge with my bits of knowledge of working with these people and so on. And then at some point he says, So what's your name then? I said, oh, it's Jeff. And we shake hands. He goes, Jeff Lloyd. I say, yes. And then there's just this long, long pause.
No.
And then he changes the subject to something completely different.
No.
Yeah.
So he knew who you were. He listened to you.
And probably hates me.
And yeah, hates you.
He probably thinks I ruined that radio station in the short time I was on there.
And he couldn't bring himself to go, oh, yes, like no. Maybe some nicety. Yes, no, I remember
no,
you.
No, nothing,
yes.
Nothing like
or,
that.
Or even, yeah, I didn't listen to that show. Like no, something no, to acknowledge.
No, no, oh. No. It was just this long, excruciating oh. pause where it was just made very clear that he didn't approve of what I'd done on those airwaves.
You will be reminded of this show and this feeling.
Adrift.
When you wake up. Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port, Adrift.
Well, there's a couple of my failed interactions. We would love to hear from you about yours. Email us, hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Tiff writes, it was my first job after moving here, so maybe around 99 or 2000. I was the office oddity since I was still pretty much new to the country. So I was trying hard just to fit in and not have any added attention brought to me. One of my co-workers had been out of the office for a few weeks while she looked after her ill mum, who sadly passed away. While she'd been off, we'd moved to a new room in our office building. This happened a lot because we had a manager that seemed to thrive on chaos and love change. I ran into my co-worker getting off the train on her first day back after losing her mum. I'm desperately trying to avoid the subject of her mum because I'm socially stupid and have no clue what to really say, although I do ask how she is and say how nice it is to see her back. We are walking from the station to our office and she says the following. I hate coming back after we've moved offices. I don't know what happened next. Obviously, I wasn't thinking. If I had been, I wouldn't have said, in an attempt to be funny but sounding a bit rude, well, that'll teach you to be off, won't it? Oh. Immediately, my brain screams at me, what have you just said? Her mum just died. And I wish the ground would open and swallow me. I know she heard me, but all she did was make a noise to acknowledge my stupidity. I slowed down and let her walk the rest of the way on her own. I avoided her for weeks after that, and when I finally plucked up the courage to apologise to her, only for her to tell me that she doesn't remember me saying it. I'm going with she genuinely didn't remember, rather than she was trying to make me feel better. Because, you know, me remembering it all these years later is painful enough.
That just reminded me of that great... Was it a call we had to the radio show from somebody once who's shared an office with one other person? And they were missing for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And then, am I right in remembering that this person sort of came back to work?
Yeah.
Our listener had sort of said, oh, where have you been for the last couple of days?
Yeah.
What did they say exactly?
What's been going on?
Yeah.
And they revealed that I think it was their mum had died, and they were it triggered something in them, and they are bewildered to this day as why, but it just triggered this horrific laughing fit,
like a nervous laughter.
Yeah, nervous laughter, and they had to leave the room, but could still be heard like behind a closed door, just like uncontrollably laughing. Can you imagine?
Saying to somebody, oh, yeah, my mum just died, and then they just start giggling, and then the giggling becomes so uncontrollable they have to leave the room. But you can hear them outside in the corridor rolling around.
You would definitely have to leave your job. There'd be no question of coming back the next day, would there?
Oh, all right, what's next?
Jennifer, she says, I'm from Scotland, Irvine to be precise, but I now live in Goffstown, New Hampshire. When I first moved to the USA, we lived in a hotel out up by my husband's company. During this time, I was at home with my daughter and not working. We did have a little kitchen and I was trying to feel at home. My daughter was little, almost two, and we liked to get out of the house during the day. Being as it was like the surface of the sun most days in the summer, we often went to the mall to make use of their little free play area. One day in this weirdly posh mall, I spied a tea shop. Not a tea room, but a shop selling tea. Well, thinks I could go with some nice tea. The tea I buy at the supermarket is rotten and I can't keep having my mum send me tea. It's too dear. I speak to the salesperson, pick a nice black tea and have her fill a bag with it. Now, I'm not a fancy tea person, let's be clear. I like a tea bag in a mug with some milk, that's all. I was taking a leap with this fancy loose tea. Anyway, she fills the bag, puts it on the scale and tells me the price. Immediately, she sees the look of sheer horror that I cannot keep from showing on my face. Oh, that'll be $90. For tea! She, on seeing my face, says, shall I take a little out? Yes, I nod, feeling the cold sweat running down my back. She takes a little scoop and removes some, puts it back on the scale. As I'm now prepared, I nod knowingly and prove that I am part of the uber rich who shops it by saying, oh yes, that's great now, thanks. I left with a tiny bag and $60 lighter. Turns out the prices were per ounce, not per pound.
Oh, God.
I never drank the posh stuff. There seemed to be never occasion to warrant that fancier tea. I later found a supermarket that sells Tetley British Blend Tea. I have never returned to the Teavana shop.
Oh, that's great.
And this is from Cam. She says, I went on a date, one of those set up, you guys might hit it off sort of things. We didn't. I've yet to experience such a lack of chemistry between two individuals in my life. But he wasn't behaving badly or anything. So out of respect to him as a fellow human person, I decided that I was going to finish out the dinner and just decline to participate in the rest of our planned evening. After several attempts at holding some inkling of conversational back and forth, we gave up, settling into long stretches of not speaking or even looking at each other and poring over the menu, even though we'd already ordered. It was one of those moments that I encountered some rather large food items stuck in one of my top teeth. As my date was engaged in rereading the appetizer list for the third time, I severely contorted my face so as to dislodge the food with my tongue. He looked up at that very moment. A normal person might say, nothing, probably best in this situation, or make a joke about having something in your teeth, or just saying, pardon me, I have something in my teeth. But what I decided to do, apropos of nothing, for reasons I still cannot determine, decided to loudly say, yarr, in a pirate voice. We locked eyes for a moment before he theatrically slowly returned his gaze back down to the menu. The exchange was never mentioned for the rest of the evening.
What do you think was going on?
I don't know. Maybe it's something to do with like the way a pirate talks. You kind of like, you
tilt your face.
Yeah, when you sort of move your mouth around. Oh, gosh.
Oh, that's great. Please share your story with us. Hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Excuse me. Do you have any wood?
Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port, Adrift.
Ooh, I'm in the stream.
Annabelle.
Yeah.
You have prepared a story.
I have, yes. So where I live in Snaresbrook, I may have mentioned before, there are no shops. Mm. There's plenty of shops in Wanstead and South Woodford either side, but none in Snaresbrook. There's a Crown Court and a Toby Carvery and a Travelodge, and that's it. Until a couple of years ago when a new restaurant opened. A nice one. No offence to the Toby Carvery. And actually, if that Toby Carvery is good enough for Tinchy Strider, who my former yoga teacher says she saw in there once, it's good enough for me. But this new restaurant, it's reviewed in the Evening Standard and people from outside of Snaresbrook are visiting it. And I don't just mean from Wanstead and South Woodford. It helps that it's next door to a tube station, I think. So, you know, people are going there. When it's an Italian restaurant, food from the south, from Puglia. And what's my favourite food?
Tomatoes.
I mean, can you imagine all those tomato-based dishes? I am so excited by it. And before it opens, I walk past it every day as I go to the tube and I watch it develop and I get more and more excited. And finally it opens and you can't get a table at first as it's fully booked. And I'm excited, but I'm not organised, of course. But they do take away coffee in the mornings and my boyfriend reports back that the coffee is okay. So on a Saturday morning, not long after it's opened, we're going out in the car. We're taking the dog somewhere nice for a walk. And I suggest getting takeaway coffees from the new restaurant. My boyfriend drops me off outside. It's about 11 o'clock and the door is open. So I go in. Nobody immediately greets me. So I wander in further. Then a young woman, early 20s, who, as it turns out, is Italian. She spins around and says to me quite aggressively, "What are you doing?" It's not the response I was expecting at all.
Not hospitality.
No, not at all. I'm quite shocked by this. And so I just say, "Oh, I just wanted to get some coffees." And she says, like again, quite aggressively, "We're not open yet and we don't do coffee at the weekends." I'm really taken aback. Like, I've gone from sunny day, taking the dog out, getting coffees, look at my nice civilised life and getting a bit pathetically excited about going into this new restaurant to someone being really horrible to me. So I do the only normal thing in this situation. I apologise to her and I leave. And I get back in the car and that's when the rage starts to build.
Yeah.
And I'm also quite upset. And I'm telling my boyfriend how this Italian girl had been horrible to me. And he says, "I know, I could tell." Even though he couldn't hear, he could see that she was being horrible to
me.
From
her body language.
Yeah, from the wind through the window. So we're still sat outside this restaurant and something comes over me and I say, "I'm going back in, I'm going to say something." And my boyfriend is totally egging me on and saying, "Yeah, you should, definitely should." And then my actual personality kicks in and I realise I can't possibly do that. And I tell Tom to drive off. So he does. But he has to do a U-turn and then go back past the restaurant. And as we do, something comes over me again. And I say, "No,
I think I am going to say something. And Tom is really egging me on now, telling me I absolutely should and how she shouldn't get away with talking to me like that. And I can only blame this egging on because I'm now getting out of the car and going back to the restaurant. The door is closed now, and that should have been the moment I changed my mind, but I don't. I'm knocking on the door, and the same Italian girl opens it, and I find myself saying, "Sorry, but actually, I think you're just really rude to me. What is this achieving? Like, it's achieving nothing. What is she supposed to say to this? Oh, yeah, you're right, I was." She doesn't. She denies it. So I've got to say something else now, but obviously I've got nothing else planned. So I'm just embarrassing myself by saying how she was rude, and I've been so excited about coming to this restaurant, but you've really put me off it now. And then someone comes over with an air of authority who introduces himself as the assistant manager, and he asks what's happening, and I have to say it all over again. And the girl just walks off because she's probably just embarrassed for me. A little bit of me is thinking now, maybe I'll get some free coffees out of this. But he just says he's really sorry, and he's sure the waitress would never be intentionally rude, and he hopes I'll still come and eat there. I mean, it was just awful. Mm-hmm. I'm shaking when I get back to the car. And the worst of it is, of course I can't go now back and eat there, like the only nice restaurant by my flat that I've been so excited about, with all its nice tomatoes and pasta and cheeses and wines. So every evening I walk past her after work. I look in to see if she's there so I can work out the waitress's shift pattern. But it's too random and I can't work it out. But after a few months, I think, oh, she'll have forgotten by now. Maybe I could wear my hair differently or something.
Yeah.
And it's around about this time that me and Tom, we drop a friend off at the tube station. We're in the car and we see her, my enemy. She's a few feet away outside having a cigarette. And our dog, Rusty, who's with us, he starts growling at her.
Yay!
Which I love because it's just that he knows that she's evil. So me and Tom are saying this and how horrible she is. And even the dog knows, et cetera, et cetera. But it's okay because she can't hear us because we're in the car. But she then gives us a really dirty look. And I realise the sunroof is open and she can hear every single word we're saying. And that's it. I can never go in there ever again. Until this week, 18 months later, I took Tom there for Father's Day, and let me tell you, it was amazing.
Yeah. Right.
It was really great. Missed out all their time, 18 months.
Was she there?
No, no. God, never have gone back. I thought she'd be there. No, no.
It is the part, one of the weirdest parts of that story is that they do coffee Monday to Friday, but they don't serve coffee on a weekend.
I know, exactly.
Adrift. Adrifting. Adrifter. Naughty.
Adrift.
Oh, just something quickly to mention. You will be, if you are very diligent and you listen to this on the day it comes out, you'll be listening to this on the 20th of June. And this Saturday, I'm going to be covering Danny Baker's show again on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Great.
So it would be good to have some sympathetic drifters tuning in and perhaps contributing stories and so on. So I'll be on BBC Radio 5 Live covering Danny Baker this Saturday morning from 9 till 11.
Okay.
So there's that bit of business. The next bit of business I wanted to get to was Patreon. So there has been a development in we were saying the next reward for Patreon supporters is going to be that there is a partners podcast where Tom and Sarah answer your questions. Do you want to know the development?
Yeah.
I have set up a WhatsApp group.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yes, yeah. I knew that.
So I've put a WhatsApp group with Sarah and Tom in it, and hopefully they will be able to thrash a date out between
I think one's been suggested.
Oh, really?
Yeah, quite soon.
Oh, there we go. This coming Saturday.
Yeah.
So that means that we should have the Partners podcast ready for next week.
Yeah.
So we should send a message, really, to our Patreon subscribers.
Yeah, we need questions, obviously.
Asking for questions for our partners. So at least one person is allowed to ask the question about spitting in the bath to Tom.
Yeah. So if you're going to ask that question, bear in mind that's what everyone else will ask and maybe add an extra question on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he can't just answer that question. Although, I mean, to get to the bottom of it, I think it would take a long time. So it could probably cover an hour. So maybe that will just be his question.
Yeah. I'm also nervous about the questions that Sarah might get because she is as candid a person as you can meet.
Oh, as is Tom.
Right.
Horrifically
right.
so.
So I'm not hugely looking forward to what might emerge.
How are we going to do it? So it's going to be all four of us.
No, here's what I think we should do because, you know, there'll be childcare to be factored in.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think you know, I should come upstairs and set them up. I think I should give them a list of questions.
Oh, we won't be here.
And then I think we should leave them to it.
No.
Yeah, don't you think that's the best way of doing it?
Oh, it is.
But it's, yeah, it's mortifying. It's, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Because I won't be there to go, no.
No. Shush. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Right.
So there you go. If you support the podcast on Patreon, and if you don't, then you must, so that you can hear this. We'll send out a message in the next day or two asking for questions. Then we'll record this special podcast with Sarah and Tom on Saturday, and you'll get it presumably next week. And I was going to say, like, everything you wanted to know, everything you ever wanted to know. But I'm imagining most people, it's not like they have been sat for years wondering.
No.
It's just when they get the email, they say, oh, what can I ask then, just to fill a bit of time? So I think it'll be more a case of that.
Yeah.
But support us on Patreon if you want access to that. patreon.com/adrift.
Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port.
Germans.
Adrift.
I think I mentioned a few weeks ago that I've accidentally made some new friends over the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So we did one of these groups before Jean was born, where they get pregnant people together and they give you tips on childbirth and things. But really what they're trying to do is forge relationships between local people who are having babies at the same time. So there's a support network. It's a lovely, lovely principle.
Yeah.
It's called the NCT. Mm. But as you know, if you listen to the podcast regularly, as you'll know, it's not really my idea of anything other than hell, really.
I think it's more for the women, so I think it's fair enough that you're not enjoying it.
No, but we have sort of accidentally made some friends off the back of it. So Sarah is very close to Becky,
mm-hmm.
whose husband is Craig. I think he's a husband, rather. Yes, and she's also close with Elspeth,
mm-hmm.
whose husband, and again, think husband rather than partner. I don't tend not to look at the ring finger. So I'm not sharking.
I was thinking more of you being judgmental. Oh, I'm a baby not married.
No, not at all. I mean, right. It just doesn't occur to me that much. But, you know, the least common law husband, Anthony. So it's Becky and Craig,
mm-hmm.
and Elspeth and Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
Now, somewhat recently, Sarah and I went to a new pub for Sunday lunch, and we thought it was great,
mm-hmm.
like really great food, like great atmosphere, loved it. So we're spending time with Becky and Craig, and we say, oh, this place is great, you should go there. And they say, oh, actually, Elspeth and Anthony are looking for somewhere really special to go for her birthday.
Mm.
Maybe we should suggest that. And we say, you absolutely should. This place is great. Mm. So they go there. So the recommendation is passed on secondhand from us to them,
mm-hmm.
Via Becky and Craig. And they go to this pub, this gastro pub,
mm-hmm.
For Elspeth's birthday. And they have a horrible time.
Oh, no.
Yes.
So it gets back to you.
It gets back to me, again, via Becky and Craig.
Oh, no.
That they didn't think the food was great.
Ugh.
Now, I'm feeling bad
because
my recommendation, which was passed on secondhand, because here's something I pride myself on, recommending the right place to the right person.
You do.
That's something that I really consider one of my great gifts in life. but that my secondhand recommendation has turned out to be somewhere that they didn't enjoy and kind of ruined her birthday as a result.
Oh, no.
But then I got to thinking, like, how do I know that their taste in places is great? Maybe they like places with horrible food and horrible decor.
You're blaming them now, right?
Well, I do trust. This is one thing I trust my own taste in. Mm. Should I, though? Should I be blaming me? Should I be blaming them? Or should I be blaming the middlemen who passed on the recommendation in the first place? I find out in this week's The Incident. Phil Wang is a comedian. He's also very fair-minded and pure of heart and clinical of thought and just and wise. I thought he would be the perfect person to ask for advice.
Have you tried blaming the middle couple entirely?
Just to deny all knowledge of the recommendation and say that they created it to drive a wedge between us.
Yeah, I'd say so. Because Yeah, you need to play these two couples off of each other, I think, if you're going to win loyalty of one.
Right.
Because every triangle of relationship is going to fall apart eventually, and you want to be in the strong position, the yes. strongest position you can have. And so this sounds like the end of this three-way friendship is over.
Right.
And now it is just every couple for themselves. So I think you're going to have to sell the middleman couple in this recommendation down the river.
Okay. And you don't think we need to sort of pick which couple we like the best and then make that that decision?
Okay, yeah. I suppose I was a bit rash there. I didn't have all the relevant information, but that's me. I take action, Jeff. You know this.
Mm-hmm, mm.
I take action. I shoot first. Ask which couple I prefer later.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Because the first couple you told, I guess, agreed with you on this part. They liked it.
Well, they hadn't been there, but they trusted our recommendation enough to then pass it on to couple number three.
Right. Okay. So they blind passed this.
It was a blind pass. Yes.
A blind pass. Well, that's kind of on them not to verify your recommendation first.
So, are you saying I'm blameless in all of this?
I'm neither denying or confirming that. All I know is that you need to stand up for yourself.
Okay.
Take a page out of Donald Trump's book, you know, never apologize, never stand down.
Yeah, I think that was Kate Moss as well, said never explain, never complain. But I do like complaining. So if I could just adopt the never explain part of the mantra.
I feel like Kate Moss has complained about things in her life, almost definitely.
But I mean, that is just speculation, though.
She must have. Look at that. Can you imagine a supermodel who never complained about anything?
Probably not. No, no.
Thank you. Exactly.
Yeah,
you don't get to where she's got by not complaining. Believe me.
Maybe that's why I haven't got to where she's got.
I think that's the only reason you aren't one of our generation's top models.
Yes.
Is your inability to complain strategically.
Are you a comfortable recommender? Because I will recommend restaurants and films and things, but I will think very carefully about who I'm recommending to before I give that endorsement. I mean, are you just very free with your recommendations?
I don't recommend. I just tell people I say I like this and I recommend things, but in the process of recommending them, they make it very clear that it's me who likes them. I'm not saying I think you will like this. I'm saying I like this, and therefore, this is for them to infer they might like it. If they try it and they don't like it, my hands are clean. I never said they'd like it. I just said I liked it.
What if you accidentally liked something that was out of step with your peers?
Like Electro Swing.
Like Electro Swing.
Yeah, well, that's me. I like it. I for a long time I liked Electro Swing, and that was out of step with pretty much anyone who doesn't have at least three items of steampunk regalia. And I learned that lesson to my detriment far too late in my social life.
Were you ostracized?
I got fair warning that it was not acceptable after a couple of unsuccessful attempts to get people to join me on the electro swing floor at a couple of festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to abandon ship before it truly sank, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm quite good at sniffing out danger like that. If you only tell people what you like, then you'll always be speaking the truth. Unless you don't know what you like.
I do know what I like, but I also fear.
Well, it sounds like if they went to a good pub and had a bad meal, they chose the wrong dishes and they have bad taste. Then do you want to be friends with a couple that has bad taste?
What if it was their taste, not the pub? What if you or I, men of taste, electro swing notwithstanding, were to go to that pub? Maybe we would like the food. Maybe they're just people with poor taste in food.
Exactly. They're not good at their ale and roast pairings. and they mess it up themselves, and it's entirely on them. So yeah. I think this also answers your question as to which couple you should commit to. And you should commit to the first. For all you know, this couple that you first recommended it to were completely aware the second couple wouldn't like it and are actually ahead of you in the game of ostracizing this third couple.
Right.
I think they're actually trying to jettison couple C.
Right.
To get closer to you two. So I think at this point you've got to join them.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you know Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port, you may also know that they're sick. Sick in a medium way. Very neutral. Neutral sick.
Adrift.
Ah, you mentioned Father's Day in passing there with the Italian restaurant story.
Mm-hmm.
How what? Because it was Tom's first Father's Day, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah, I think it went very well in that he didn't really want to do anything apart from watch football and garden. So I didn't really have to make much of an effort.
Isn't gardening work?
I've noticed that men sometimes, when they have children, take up a hobby that can be perceived as work, but it means they don't have to do childcare. So I think he thinks, I'll take an interest in the garden, which means I can go outside on my own, fiddle around. She can't criticise me because I'm making something about the house nicer, but I'm actually enjoying it and I don't have any childcare.
Right.
That's
right.
My suspicion.
Oh, here's a question. So when you got Rusty Scruff, the teddy bear king, he's firm but fair, did you not celebrate Father's Day from that point onwards?
Sorry, that's mean of me to laugh, actually, because, you know, lots of people, their dog is their child.
Yes.
And that's a lovely thing.
Yeah.
But no, it didn't.
No. I love Father's Day. I really, really love it.
Good.
So I spent my whole life not caring about it because my dad doesn't care about it.
Of course
it.
He doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, he just...
yeah.
So the ritual goes on Father's Day. I gave up cards years ago because they mean nothing to him.
Right.
So I ring him up on Father's Day morning, as I did yesterday, and say, Dad. He goes, what? I go, Happy Father's Day. He goes, is it bloody Father's Day? I had no idea. I said, yes, it's Father's Day. So, I don't bloody care about things like that. Father's Day is invented by the post office.
Right.
If anything, you know, you should be pro post office because he was a postman for all those years. But anyway, so I started my Father's Day yesterday doing that, as I have done for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And then my wife and Jean came in and they gave me a beautiful card and present that Jean had made at nursery.
Oh.
And I found myself like sitting there sobbing.
Well, he made the present.
Yeah, but I mean, this is my point, really.
Right, okay.
I'm sobbing. It was like a ceramic tile that I think is a fridge magnet that had some sort of paint marks and scribbles on it.
Oh.
And then it had been glazed and magnets had been put or some kind of thing to affix it to the wall or whatever had been put on the back of it.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there sobbing at it and thinking, actually, his input in this thing and the card has been minimal. The woman who works at the nursery who spends time with him all day, it's her handwriting.
Oh.
She probably had to do all the glazing and stuff.
Yeah, how old is he too? I don't think he did the glazing.
No. So I'm sitting there sobbing.
Oh.
At something like the lady who works at the nursery and has probably made 15 of these things.
Yeah.
Has sort of knocked off in an afternoon. So, and then, and part of the reason I really love Father's Day is because it's a day of the year where I get really spoiled.
Mm.
I got taken out for my favourite lunch, which is chili paneer.
Good.
And then we got taken to a city farm.
Oh.
And I couldn't help but thinking, look, I like animals. You know, I'm vegetarian. I think people who know me know I'm an animal lover. But if there's a day where you're spoiling me,
right?
I'm not sure a city farm is the place.
You don't feel that was for you?
It was more for him.
Right.
And there were so few animals here, it was almost impossible to see them because there were all people crowding around them. There was about four animals in total. So most of the time we just spent it as looking at a train track which went by and trains kept going past and he was just waving at the trains all the time.
Oh.
I was thinking, he is having a great time waving at these trains,
yeah.
But I'm not sure what this is the day of the year where Dad is really being indulged and appreciated.
Right. And you couldn't take all your happiness from his happiness?
No, of course not.
No, of course. That'd be stupid.
That'd be ridiculous.
No.
Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port in a show called Adrift.
On to Quandary Corner. I need to confess something.
What is it?
I've forgotten all the different names of this feature now.
What?
Because, you know, the tallies where you draw four lines and then you put one across to signify five?
Mm.
There's a reason for that. And what that reason is the human brain can hold four things just without thinking about it. But once it's five, you need some kind of system of keeping it all in place.
And we've got too many names.
I think that's what's happened. So if you see the Beatles, you would know without counting there were four Beatles there.
Mm.
Whereas if you saw a picture of the Spice Girls, you'd have to kind of, however quickly your brain mentally counts five.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I think we've gone over, I think there were four additional names other than Quandary Corner.
Mm.
And now I can't hold them in my brain anymore. So I know there was a new one last week, but it's fallen out. We're gonna have to make a list.
Okay, well, I mean, between the two of us, we've got Clap Clinic, Rural School, Knowledge College, but I'm missing one, aren't I?
Problematic.
Oh, there we go. That's
I thought there was a new one though.
Yeah, Knowledge College.
Okay. Anyway, this is where we ask you if you've been in a social situation, you need to know what the rule is. Let us know about it and we will tell you. So who's the first one from?
This comes from Alex. I've been plagued by an issue of social etiquette for many years that I'm hoping you can help with. There is a toilet theme to the question, which I'm sure Jeff will appreciate, but it is nothing revolting, I promise. I'm colourblind, and this causes a real issue in knowing whether a public toilet is occupied or not. Many toilets, including those on trains, which you sometimes have to enter when others waiting at the end of the carriage are watching you, indicate whether they're occupied by showing a red, occupied, or green, vacant strip of colour. For most colourblind people, red and green appear exactly the same. So if the toilet is occupied, i.e. showing a red marker, we do not know. If you try and open an occupied toilet when other people are around, you look at best stupid or worse, like some kind of pervert. What's more, you always get a filthy look from whoever was in the toilet when they come out. I never feel like shouting, oops, it's because I'm colourblind, because the embarrassment is too strong and we all want to keep human interaction to a minimum. I have gambled before and got it wrong, meaning I waited outside an empty toilet only for a queue of bewildered people to form behind me as I wait for a non-existent occupant to emerge. What should I do? Knock on toilet doors and explain my predicament? Explain to strangers if they're around if I could use their help? Or just accept I will only ever be able to use the toilet at home or in a place kind enough to have toilets which say the words vacant or occupied? Desperately yours, Alex. P.S. If you could leave any cubicle doors ajar when you finish with them in future, that would be a great help.
Right, one word for you.
Go on.
Stethoscope.
Stethoscope?
Wear a stethoscope, hold it up against the toilet door. You will hear if there's somebody in there or not.
Oh, that's better than my suggestion of putting a mirror under. Do you think that would look a bit weirder?
Yeah, maybe so. Okay. So I have spent a lot of time outside empty toilet cubicles when I haven't pushed hard enough.
Oh, God, that's the worst. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think the thing you need to do is, on a train, it's not that difficult. So if you sit in a seat that's facing down towards the toilet, you wait to watch somebody go in there, and then you want to be the next person after that person comes out.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you could apply that to other lavatories. But, I mean, you could be gone for a long time.
It's so difficult. I never even thought about this. Why are they green and red? It's a terrible idea.
It is awful. I mean, really, there should be a campaign, but I feel like it would be appropriation if somebody who isn't colourblind jumped on and started a campaign. Mm. So you need to do this yourself. But
I think
your strategy needs to be watching for other people to go to the toilet, then following them and waiting for them to come out.
Could you wear some kind of armband that distinguishes you as someone who has problems with this? I don't know, just trying to like make people aware that without you having to say anything, because as you say, you don't interact.
No, you're right. I mean, this deserves a campaign of some sort. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as non-colorblind people, we're not the people to launch this campaign. However, we would support and endorse it. We would be there for you as allies.
Okay, so the answer is changing the system. No more green and red, but we can't do it for you.
Yeah,
okay.
And my following solution, which I think was a good one that hasn't got the credit it deserves from you, I don't think.
The stethoscope one?
No, the one where you sort of watch for other people
That was very good. Good. Okay, let's move on to Suze. She says, I'm hoping that you can give me some advice about a recent dilemma that I had on holiday. We went on a two-city break. In the first city, we stayed at a hotel with a full-sized indoor pool and a decent-sized outdoor pool. The pools were hardly used by other guests, which, as an introverted and pretty unsociable person, suited me down to the ground. I got into the habit of swimming 10 lengths, coming out and relaxing with a book or some podcasts, and then repeating this a few times. However, the hotel in the second city only had a small rooftop pool. I tried swimming lengths, but found that one end was so shallow I just stubbed my toe. I needed to swim widths instead, but the pool was so small that after I'd pushed off from the side and swum a few strokes, I found myself gliding towards the other side. It wasn't worth counting widths, so I decided to swim for a set amount of time before coming out for a rest. This is where my dilemma occurred. On the day in question, I'd gone up to the pool, was pleased to find the area deserted, put my things on a sun lounger, and then got into the pool. I decided to swim until 4 o'clock. I plodded back and forth across the pool, occasionally looking at the clock on the wall. At 5 to 4, I was feeling pleased with myself and looking forward to chilling out with my book. But then, with only a few minutes to go, one of the other guests arrived. He put his towel on a sun lounger and then got into the pool. What was I to do? If I got out of the pool when I planned, it would have meant getting out almost straight after the other guests had got in. It was only a small pool, so I could hardly pretend that I hadn't noticed him. Would he feel that I was deliberately getting out because I didn't want to share a pool with him? Would he be upset or offended? How long did I need to keep swimming so that when I did get out, it would seem totally unrelated to his arrival? To make matters worse, I'm a middle-aged white woman and he was a young Asian man, so I worried that my hasty exit from the pool could be misinterpreted as having racist undertones. I hope that you can give me some advice in case I'm ever in this situation again.
Okay, well, to answer your question, 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
That's the basic answer of how long you need to stay in the pool for.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, there's an issue here, which is a pool that size, I think, is a splashing around pool, not an exercise pool.
Oh, it's slight criticism.
No, I think it's fine if you're on your own. Yeah, it could be whatever you want it to want it to be. But it sounds to me I'd be able to tell you from looking at a pool whether it was sort of splashing around
right,
or whether it was meant for doing widths or lengths or whatever, but I suspect it falls into the former category. And I don't know what to advise you about the perceived racist undertones. I'm imagining they wouldn't be perceived at all, but as somebody who just is constantly finding reasons to worry, that is a very familiar reason to worry for me.
And she shouldn't, for example, go, excuse me, I'm not being racist, I'm just getting out of the pool. That would not be appropriate, for example.
Oh, I'll tell you what I would have done, actually. This is excruciating. I would have made some small talk before getting out of the pool.
Oh, no.
Just to show I was one of the good ones.
Like, oh, you definitely would have done. And what sort of things would you have said? Like, small pool, isn't it?
Like, something like that. Yeah.
I'll get out and let you have a turn now.
Yeah, but, something like that. Yeah. Some awful excruciating.
That's not the answer. No. I would just get out and not think about it. I mean, I personally wouldn't, but that's my advice to you.
If you have a situation like this, which you've been agonising over, please email us hello@adriftpodcast.com. And that was our podcast. Thank you so much for downloading. And if you enjoy spending time with us every week, show your appreciation by supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/adrift. Thanks to Man and the Echo for the backing music and to Emily Harrison for the incidental music during the incident. And advice this week came from the marvellous Phil Wang. Phil is one of my favourite stand-ups. And if you haven't had a chance to go and see him live, then you should. But if that's not going to happen anytime soon for you, then you will be able to see him as part of the comedy lineup doing stand-up on Netflix, which is coming out on the 3rd of July. Vince Lynch and Simon Wilcox are our announcers and made our idents. Patrick Gunning and Iwana Babu provided technical support. Kim Rainey made our artwork and Carla Gowlett took the photos. Share your story with us. hello@adriftpodcast.com. We would love to hear from you. Which leaves just one last thing to say, and it is, of course, yarr!
Adrift.
Adrift.
Okay, this comes from Anne Schedwell. It's a good name, isn't it? Mm. Schedwell. I really enjoy saying that. Who says, hello, Jeff and Annabelle.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for my title. I've applied to change my bank details and passport to High Steward Anne, as you suggested. I found a page on Wikipedia which listed all the High Stewards since 1974, but I was disappointed not to be listed on it.
What?
I thought I'd try and edit the page. I've never done this before. And I found that I could have added myself, but then I was too scared of what might happen if I did. I used to listen to Pete and Jeff right up from when they were on the evenings on Virgin Radio, but I stopped listening when they split up and started to listen to another radio station. I seem to remember I joined a Pete and Jeff Yahoo group to follow them.
Oh, Yahoo.
Oh, yeah, that was Marty, wasn't it? Marty Edelstein, who used to run that thing. I've never listened to any podcast before until my friend told me from about your other podcast, Reason to Be Cheerful. This led me to Adrift, and I've now subscribed to Hometown Glory, which is the radio show I do for Union Jack Radio, where I interview people about their hometowns. So all my time on the bus to and from work is accompanied by Jeff. I decided to contribute using Patreon after a day when I was a bit miserable on the way back from work, but you made me laugh out loud on the bus and cheered me up. Thank you. Thank you.
That's great.
For your money and for your ears. Mm. I'm not really sure what a podcation is, as I didn't listen to your radio show, but I think it's a way of saying hello to people. So can you please do a podication for my husband, Paul? He doesn't listen to any podcasts at all, but if I show him how to listen to yours, you might get another listener. Mm. You'll definitely have to listen to at least one episode if you read this out. Mm. No, it's not much, but it's a start. I would just fast forward through to this bit if I were you,
just
Anne.
Just give him his and literally just the name.
Yeah.
Paul,
yeah.
And then that's
it. Yeah. I'm sorry I haven't any good stories for you, as I seem to have an ability to blank out all the awful things I've said and done. If I started to try and recall and document them, it could lead me to a bad place. Keep up the work. Love, High Steward Anne. Well, Anne, thank you. Thank you for finding us. It's very interesting to me the way some people find this podcast.
Yeah, isn't it?
You know, you and I were on the radio for longer than Pete and I were.
Mm.
Especially on Virgin Radio, which became Absolute.
Yeah.
But that whole chapter was missing for Anne, and here we are, reunited in midlife, on my part. I don't know how old Anne is.
No.
Yeah. Anne, thank you. Really appreciate your support on Patreon. Paul, there are now three of us in this marriage, it would seem.
It does seem that way.
Four, if you include Annabelle.
Yeah, well, I think...
Five, if you include Ed Miliband.
Yeah.
And then we could add in the guests from Hometown Glory and, you know...
Busy marriage all of a sudden. Yeah.
She's like a cult leader. Or the Marquess of Bath.
Yeah.
Anne, thank you very much. Paul, this is podicated to you. If you would like a podication, email hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.